Welcome to Let's Talk Canine Fitness with your hosts, Katerina Mattioli and Dr. Leslie I. Join us for the monthly podcast on all things dog fitness. Young, old, overweight, or athletic, our obsession with canine fitness has you covered. Hello, hello, hello. Hi, Katerina. How's it going?
Hi, Leslie. Awesome. And you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Early in the morning.
A little too early for me. So, today's mini-sode, we got a lot of questions from our patrons, which is really awesome. Thank you guys so much for all the questions.
I agree. Thank you very much.
We are going to do our best to answer all of them for you, and just remind you to keep the questions coming because we want to do these every month. So let's dive right into the first question. This question comes from Sabine, and she asked, what is your favorite rehab book?
So you want me to start?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, as we talked about this, I think it was last minisode or last episode. I can't remember. That's why she posted the question on Facebook, and I promised her to send a list of the favorite books. But I had to pick one, and as Leslie picked one that is also in my top three, I took... My choice is Essential Facts of Physical Medicine, Rehabilitation, and Sports Medicine in Companion Animals. Just for Sabine, there is a German version of this book too. I will text you the German title if needed. I can't tell you now because I'm having trouble with my iPad. I really like this book because it covers a lot, and it's really great if you're looking for a topic just to go quick through it. It's huge, but it is expensive, but it's worth the money.
Well, I'm going to have to check that book out because I actually don't have it, and it sounds really interesting. So
it really is. It really is worth the money. Go and get your copy.
Okay. I have the same problem. I really struggle to pick like a favorite book. I struggle with picking a favorite of anything, honestly. So what I decided to say is Sasha Foster's book, Canine Cross Training: Building Balance, Strength, and Endurance in Your Dog. And the reason I picked this book is this was really foundational in my rehab career. I think I maybe even picked up this book. Actually, it probably came out when I was going through my training. And I, you know, definitely love rehab, really into it. But for me, it was all about sports medicine. You know, I had the dogs that did sports. I did sports myself. And so that was my main focus and reason for going into the profession. And this really was the first book that came out and really talked about dogs as athletes and preparing them for sports. And so that's why I have to say it tops my list of books.
I completely agree. I just have a digital copy of it, but it is on all my iPads. So yeah. It's one I'm looking at on a very frequent basis. So
yeah, I have to say, so as another little insight, there are pictures in there that are pretty special to me too. There happens to be a dog named Iggy that is pretty much the focus of chapter 3. So if you guys have it, you should check that out and check out Iggy. Cool. So Sabine's next question was, could we talk about stretching? And she really wanted to know like the differences, like stretching before exercise, stretching after exercise. Do we stretch? do we do short stretches for like 2 to 3 seconds, long stretches? I think this is a really interesting question because for me, stretching is a really hot topic. I basically break it down and say stretching is for rehab patients.
Yes.
And dynamic flexibility is for fitness. So I do not do any kind of passive stretching with my athletes. So I don't recommend stretching before exercise, before competition. I don't really recommend it even after. I would rather the dog go get body work. Because there's going to be some stretching happen when they get body work, but I think those are professionals that really understand the tissue and know how to manipulate it. When you're recovering from an injury, I think it's different. I think stretching is important in getting the tissue back to its healthy state.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have before with my clients, we only do active stretching during the lessons, and I, when preparing my dogs for the ring, I have my own warm up routine, which is sometimes which people think it's very funny when you have companion dogs, small little dogs, and you're talking about a warm up routine before entering the confirmation ring, but we have a warm-up routine, and active stretches are part of it.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, for me, in my head, I know the difference between passive stretching and active stretching. What I find is my clients only hear the word stretching, and yeah, to them, stretching is always passive stretching. And so that's why I have started, when I'm talking and to my clients, when I'm teaching, I now say stretching basically means passive stretching.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, equivalate that. And then for active stretching, rather than say active stretching, because they only hear stretching, I call it dynamic flexibility.
So you just renamed it.
Yeah. And because it is really, I mean, dynamic flexibility to me is the definition of what you're doing. You know, you're taking the tissues through their normal range of motion. Yeah. And then I think because it has different words, people can better separate it in their head and understand that there's a difference.
Because you have just, when I was talking before, I was just, oh, passive. No, I mean, active. It's like that the confusion is, it happens. Yeah. It happens so fast. So it's maybe better to have another term to describe active, yeah, stretching.
Yeah, for me, it definitely, like, I could see people when I would say like passive stretching, active stretching, and go back and forth. Like their mind, like they were like, wait, I don't understand what the difference is.
Exactly.
And now in like the last year, I really started saying, okay, we're only going to talk about it as dynamic flexibility, and people are like, oh, you know, don't touch my dog. Oh, got it. So
that's good.
Great question. We could probably do an entire episode on stretching, especially because that's one of my passionate things. Like, I want to go around and tell everyone, stop passively stretching your dog before they compete. Because there's actually some interesting research out there on it. So
there is, yeah.
Helga asked us, what are your favorite exercises for healthy super seniors? And I'm going to give a quick shout out to Helga. Hi, Helga. I hope Sheldon is doing awesome and that he is a super senior. So
what is the definition of a super senior?
Just an awesome older dog.
How old is he?
Maybe when they get into double digits, okay, we'll call them super seniors. For me, super seniors, I tend to do a lot of the same exercises that I do for any dog. But I make them easier, right? They're maybe not quite as challenging of equipment or as challenging reps. I will say, here's this feeds in with Sabine's question. Mm-hmm. I think with seniors, I maybe focus a little bit more on dynamic flexibility. So some of my favorite exercises, I have one that I call a good morning, where the dog basically starts in their posture position with their rear feet targeted. Mm-hmm. On something, and then they do a play bow and then move into a hip extension stretch, and they keep their back feet targeted the whole time. So their front end can move kind of back and forth. But this exercise to me, and why I call it a good morning, is because it imitates that movement that the dogs do when they come out of their crate, yeah, or when they get up from a nap. So I would say, I'm bad with favorites, but Helga, if I had to pick one favorite exercise for my super senior, it would probably be a good morning.
That's good. So what can I add? I see it quite the same. With older dogs, I choose different equipment, easier equipment, like back to a dog that is starting, or like the difficulty of a younger dog. So it's close to the ground. And for a favorite exercise, everything that is strengthening rear.
Yes.
That is my focus on senior dogs, to keep that rear, keep those rear muscles going. That is my focus for them. My exercise might look quite the same as yours, with these active stretching, include active stretches in those exercises on easier equipment.
Yeah.
So I don't work a lot with donuts, or I work a lot with platforms or fit stage. One of my favorite piece of equipment for senior dogs are the flexiness bars, because I really like them for senior dogs to work with them.
Cool. I have to start taking my flexiness bar with me. Putting some senior dogs on it.
I really like it, especially if middle-sized dogs, smaller dogs and middle-sized dogs, with large breeds, it might be already too difficult.
I was going to say, because I've been using it for my not super seniors, more my middle-aged dogs, who I think are like at the top of their game, and it's amazing how difficult it is for them, like just holding position and then asking them to do a little bit of movement on it. It's really move side to side quite a bit. They have to figure out how to balance it, and I love it for the challenge for them, but I don't know. I think if I put my 14-year-old dog on it, he would find it a little too hard.
Just use less air. With less air, it's better. It's not rocking as much as it does when it's fully inflated. Then it works. So with the older dogs, heavier dogs, I mean 20 kilos up, I would use less air.
Okay.
So it's more flat on the ground, but it still works because you're working to the ground. So it's though they still have this donut peanut kind of feeling on it, but it's not as high. So
perfect. Good to know. And that actually transitions very nice into our question from Emily, who asked, what's our favorite do-it-yourself fitness equipment? So I think this is a tough question for both of us. I am definitely open. Like, I work with people who have whatever. Like, I'm there to help you be creative. Like, I don't want fitness to be limited just to people who can
afford
to buy the equipment. The thing is, Emily, I think I've said this before, maybe not on this podcast, but I myself am much better at buying things than making things. So when it comes to do-it-yourself equipment, I am not very good at it for myself. I think, like, I was super proud of myself when I made a platform, which is literally, yeah, a purple platform, which is literally just like a piece of wood, you know, with two other pieces of wood put on the bottom. So it's raised up a little bit, and then, you know, paint it and give it a little bit of texture. And I was like, I'm so amazing.
Let's go into production.
Yeah. So I am definitely, this is not great for me to like be like, oh, this is my favorite. But what I will say is I've had some pretty interesting creations with students that I've worked with. I think my favorite that I ever saw and was really impressed by what she could do with it was I had someone use a bale of hay as their instability equipment. And she would basically, like, she could take some hay away to change the size, like, and she had lots of bales because, you know, she, I think, you know, had horses or something. But I just, you know, when she first asked, I was kind of like, I don't know. I'm not sure if that's going to work. And then every time she posted a video, I was more and more impressed with actually how well it worked. So that's mine.
That's interesting. Pattern.
Yeah. Oh.
So
it's kind of like, you know, maybe a little bit like the fit bars, like the fit stages, where it's, yeah, it's got a nice top surface to work on, but it has just enough, like, it's not uniform enough that you get some interesting instability.
Yeah, and it's not as pressed that it is very, the stability is not given because, yeah, the hay is not as pressed or used to be when back then when I was involved with horses. I don't know how it is now. But so, yeah, as everyone might know, I'm officially very into fancy colored equipment and ideas how to create. But I have a shadow, and my shadow is the person who is realizing ideas. I think I don't want to that do not go into production, and he's doing all the interesting stuff for me I need for my classes. So everyone that followed maybe our show dog fitness class has seen it last week. My favorite piece of do-it-yourself equipment is a stacking board, which is actually just two pieces of wood,
yeah,
screwed together, and it's in the form of, it's like an L shape.
Oh yeah.
Where you can lay our sensi mats on the ground on top of it, and then you have like a stops, I think an area that stops the dog from walking towards you, or it's good for, you can use it for rear placement, for front foot placement. It's not an instability equipment. It's just it's for posture work.
Yeah.
And
I saw pictures of it on your social media. It was very cool. I was like, oh, that's a smart thing to do.
Yeah, I use this for quite a while now in my handling classes to help people understanding how to make the distance between and your dog bigger when it comes to free stack. So that's my favorite piece of equipment. And platform wise, because I see it the same as you, Leslie, I don't want that people have to buy a lot of equipment to keep their dog healthy and to do the fitness work. If they want and if they can afford, everyone is welcome to buy Flexiness, of course. but I use a simple piece of wooden board, have a yoga mat on top, And then I use two instable pieces, like the twin disc, for example, or a disc you already have at home because you used them for yourself, to make an unstable platform. That's another do-it-yourself idea I give my clients that don't want or don't can't afford a whole equipment studio thing.
Perfect. So Emily also had another question. She wanted us to talk a little bit about the role of consent in fitness and rehab and talk about a few practical strategies for pet owners and rehab professionals. And this is definitely another question I think we could do an entire episode on. But really quickly, I think for me, it's all about imagining myself in the dog's position. So think about, for a lot of dogs, being small and everyone else is bigger and all the equipment is bigger. You know, how does that feel? And, you know, how would it feel if I was suddenly picked up and placed on equipment? And so that's where a lot of, I don't know, for lack of a better word, like I would always almost call it like trying to have empathy for the dog and really put myself in their situation. And then from there, I can go into like, okay, I want to give the dog choice and make them want to be a willing participant in this process. And I think it's pretty easy to like convince the dog that this is the way to go. Like that they, like you can see the dog almost being thankful that this is how it's going. I think the harder part of the team to convince is sometimes the owner. Because I think they often are like, no, I want this done and I want it done now and I want the dog better. But I will say when they actually see the dog transform, I think they're more grateful that you took your time and gave the dog choice. So like right now I have a client who, when they first came in, the dog was just really scared of everything, scared of me, scared of the environment, you know, just a fairly sensitive dog. And it was a struggle. Like I needed to do an exam, but I still tried to keep my exam as less invasive as possible. You know, I gave lots of breaks. So I think that's one of the things that's important. I think a lot of times when we have these dogs that are fearful or worried, we want to rush through everything. We want to be like, oh, let me just get it done real quick. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes that's not good for the dog. That makes things worse. I would rather go in, check one thing, and then give the dog a break. Let them go explore the room, talk to the owner a little bit. You know, when they start to re-engage, then I'll check something else. So I tend to go slower, actually, I think. And then, you know, this particular dog, I think yesterday was maybe the fourth time I've seen her. And now she's running up to greet me. She's kissing my face. She lets me do a full exam. She accepts her treatment. Like she stands there while I laser her, while I check her range of motion, while I do exercises with her. And it's this huge transformation. And it only took, you know, four visits. Like that's not really a lot in the scheme of things. And the owner is super excited. She's like, oh my God, I'm so happy my dog is having a good experience. And the big thing is it's going to make the outcome better too, because the dog wants to be a part of it.
For me, I just, when dogs enter my studio, it's just, I make it clear. There are a few things I clear with the dog. First thing is I respect you and your area. I don't want to be your friend. If you want to come to me, you are welcome, but you don't need to. This is the first things I clear with the dog, and I tell the owner, let them run free. And most of the dogs. When if you respect them and are on this and in your energy level, you adapt your own energy level to their behavior, it works. So
yeah,
I think as you said, it needs a lot of empathy and understanding, and pressure doesn't help.
Correct. Yeah, trying to just get through it never makes anything better.
And this is what I tell the owners. I might can't touch your dog today. Then you will have to do the work. I will show you what you can do. Maybe your dog comes. And then I had dogs. The owner came in and said, oh, he's not, you can't touch this dog. And he might bite you or tries to bite you. And in the end, we were sitting on the floor and the dog was sitting on my lap. So,
yeah.
I don't exactly. want to be, I don't want, I make it clear, I don't want to be your friend. I don't want to pet you. There is no pressure from my side.
Yeah. Same thing with me. Like I have had people come in and they're like, oh, well, my dog never takes treats at the vets or from anyone. And by the end of the appointment, they're taking treats. Because again, like I'm not pressuring them to do it. I'm not nagging them. I'm not, you know, I'm just like, I'm gonna put some treats on the floor over here. If you decide you want to investigate them, that's awesome. So I think there's lots of different things you can do. And what I'm gonna say, Emily, is this is kind of my big thing. I think that's why you probably asked the question. So I'm going to do just a little plug. I don't know if you are a rehab professional. I am actually doing a talk in the online pet health virtual conference in November on consent in veterinary rehab. So if you're a professional, I would highly recommend you sign up for that conference. I think it's going to have a lot of great topics.
I think it's the weekend of the 14th, right?
November
14th.
Yeah.
14 and 15. Yeah.
Yeah. So check that out, Emily. Last two questions come from Alyssa. We'll start with the easy one first. Can you talk about how much variety you put into your workouts? Do you do the same exercises every day or do you vary them? So for me, this is a really easy one. I vary them. I get bored. I hate doing the same thing over and over and over. I will say, you know, a lot of times exercises repeat. So the same type of exercise, but I'm mixing it up with what equipment I'm using or what order I'm doing it in or how I'm doing it. I kind of think of like the way I like to train is more like with people, like when you go to the gym and the coach is like, okay, here's your workout. And then the next day you go and they're like, okay, here's your workout. And it's totally different. And it just keeps mixing it up and, you know, keeps you entertained, because I know for me, I need to be entertained. If I know what the workout is going to be ahead of time, there's much more likelihood that I would just be like, ugh, I don't want to do it today. I'm not going. So I do the same thing with my dogs. Not because I necessarily think my dogs think that way, but it just, for me, it keeps me entertained. Now, that being said, with my clients, I always ask, which do you prefer? Because I definitely have clients that want routine. They want to know on Monday, I do these exercises. On Tuesday, I do these exercises. Wednesday I do the, you know, and so then I give that to them. I plan it for what they prefer. What about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of a person that likes routine. The idea of routine. But in the end, it ends up always like what I and my dog, I'm talking about my own dogs and their fitness program, what we want to do. Because Boston Terriers tend to be very stubborn. And if they don't want to do an exercise, they won't do it. So I sometimes have to switch, which means switch exercise or switching equipment. But of course, it depends on the goal we are working towards and on the specific dog that I'm working with. So sometimes we stick on a plan, and with other dogs we are changing, we are going with the flow. My clients get their plans, and they are very strict. They can choose the days they can do the specific exercise, but it's the plan says for a week you have to do this and you have to do how many of these exercise, but they can plan themselves. If they get bored, it is written that they can contact me for a little bit more variety. So, yeah, I think as conclusion, it depends on the dog and yourself, how you're feeling, because in the end, it has to be fun.
Yes, fun.
And, yeah, and if you're bored, your dog is bored too, and then I would switch. If you like to do the same thing all over and over again, and it works for your team, and it is a step towards your goal, then it's fine. It's just fine. If it isn't, change.
Yeah, and I will say, so just as a little aside, I'm different when it's rehab.
Of course.
When it's rehab, it is more about doing the same exercises. When it's conditioning, then I vary it up. So,
well stated.
Little clarification.
Needed clarification. That's completely correct.
Yeah. So, final question. Discuss structure and angulation and how that affects dogs' muscles and what a person should look for in structure related to their sport dog. The big question. I don't even know how many times we've said it now, but this definitely could be its own, you know, proper full episode.
Or maybe two episodes. A series of episodes.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about. I think the biggest thing for structure, what you want to think about first is, what is your purpose for the dog? Like, don't go straight to, like, you want a specific structure. First say, what is this dog going to do? Like, you know, is it a hunting dog? Is it a show dog? Is it a agility dog? You know, is it a herding dog? Because based on what you want to do, your sport, as Alyssa says, that's going to kind of guide you into what structure you want to look for a little more. So if we think about like the border collie who is herding, they tend to herd in a crouch, right? They stock up on the sheep. They also need to run fast and turn fast. But, you know, they get low and they creep up. And so a dog like that is going to need a bit more angulation in its limbs to be able to do that purpose. And so you will get a dog that has more angulation in its front and back. I'm still looking for balance. Like, I don't necessarily want a dog that has really nicely angulated shoulder or nice shoulder layback and then
an extended
a not
rear.
So very, good very rear. Extended. Yeah. Then it's not balanced, and it's probably going to suffer a little bit in its purpose. So I think that's the most important. But once you have, you know, your purpose, and therefore you're know what structure you're looking for, then I would say, okay, take that specific dog and evaluate the structure and kind of look how their angles when they stand, and then the muscles, like which muscles are used a little bit more comes more a part of the picture. So based on how straight they are, how angulated are, different muscles will be engaged when they're standing or have to work a little harder to hold that posture. So it's for me, it's kind of hard to really quickly give you the full picture. It's easier to like say, take one single dog and be like, okay, this is what I see in this dog. Because I don't think there's necessarily like right or wrong structure. There's what you want for your purpose. There's structure that better suits your purpose.
Yeah, I think we have to go back to the breed standard and look, what is this breed made for? What's the main job of this breed? And then you can go back and see what is the purpose I want to do. So you will have to choose the breed according to your goal and not how the dog looks like. And then you can take the individual dog and check angulations if that fits more or less to what the needs are. I think that's and balance structure is always very important. I think no exaggeration is
no exaggerated angles. And unfortunately, a lot of times the exaggerated angles are what catches people's eyes. And so people are like, ooh, look at that. And it's like, actually,
yeah,
calm it down a little. And it's probably more purposeful. But what I was going to say that brought up, going back to Sabine's question about favorite books, I'm going to mention my favorite structure book, maybe. I can find it. Here it is. It's called What's Your Angle
by Helen. That is the second one. I have two of those.
I have the puppy one. So there's the
green one. Yeah, exactly.
Performance puppy.
I really like those two, and I like the approach that she has in the book.
So yes.
It's very great structure evaluation.
Yeah, so those are my go-to references for structure. There was one other thing I was going to say. Oh, so going back to breed standard and looking at what the dog's original purpose was, if you want to do something different than their original purpose, then maybe you should go, that's where you look for dogs that maybe have a little bit different structure than the breed standard, right? So like if I want, say, a German short hair pointer, but I want to do it for agility, okay, not hunting, I'm going to look for one that has a bit more angulation, especially in the front.
Because they are very upright. So.
Yeah. So I think that's important to recognize. If your purpose is different than what the original breed purpose was, you might want to seek out something different than the written standard.
Yeah, I think... my opinion on this is choose the breed according to what you want to do, and yes, don't adapt the dog to what you want to do.
I completely agree. I think we should choose the breed appropriately, but I think there are certain sports and organizations that actually push you to try and get a breed that's not meant for the sport because you can get higher accolades. So,
okay.
So AKC agility, I think, is a good example where they really push that agility is for all dogs and every dog should be able to do it. And because they have a program called the Invitational, where basically the top five of each breed get invited to go to this big event, and it's very prestigious and you get big awards. It's the only one I know of from AKC where you get monetary awards. You actually get money if you do well. But because of that, it definitely sometimes pushes people to get breeds that aren't necessarily made to do well at agility, but they, if they do well enough, they can get invited to the invitational. So that's where I think sometimes we have this, like, the breed doesn't exactly fit the sport.
Yeah.
Or the other thing I see a lot is, you know, people just, they love a certain breed and they also really love a sport and they want to try and make it work. And, you know.
Yeah, I think that that could be a whole episode as well. If it,
we love talking about these things because it gives us things to talk about that we maybe don't necessarily recognize are interesting. So
we don't think about it because it's
keep all the questions coming. And if you aren't a patron yet, it's easy to become one. Just go to our patron page, and for as little as $4 a month, you can also ask questions for our mini-sodes. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. We will see you in the next episode. But until then, remember, stay fit
and
stay in the game. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Let's Talk Canine Fitness. If you enjoyed our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and online at www.letstalkcaninefitness.com. Want some bonuses? Support us on Patreon. Every month, we will release a mini-sode exclusively from Patreon questions. Plus, other special bonuses you will find only on the Let's Talk Canine Fitness Patreon page. This episode was produced by Leslie Ide and Caterina Mattioli. Music written and performed by Moonfly. Music provided by PremiumBeat.com.